Hello, good evening, and welcome to Seascapes. On tonight's programme, I'm in Rosslare in County Wexford, where they have big plans to develop the port. I'm standing in the middle of the port of Rosslare, watching trucks and cars unload from ships from Europe and the UK. Down here in the southeast corner of the country, they say that a lack of capacity in Dublin, Brexit and a vastly improved road system means that this port is ripe for redevelopment. I've been around speaking to people about their plans for Brexit and beyond. And I first met Glenn Carr, General Manager for Rosslare Europort. We met at berth number one in the port.
How busy are you now at the moment? You've got, what, four sailings from here a day?
Yeah, four sailings a day to the UK. We also have four sailings a week to France at the moment, and we've two sailings also to Spain, Bilbao, with Brittany Ferries. We also have if you just look over there, Fergal, you'll see there's a trade car in there, Neptune Lines as well, to your left.
Okay.
They specialise in trade cars. There's about 400 trade cars, new cars, for the car market coming off that ship here today. So, yeah, so four sailings a day to the UK, four sailings a week to France, and two sailings a week to Spain for the roll-on, roll-off and passenger business.
You could handle a bit more business, could you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, we operate probably around 45% capacity here, so certainly we could handle two to three sailings a day more here with a little bit of strain on the infrastructure, and that's why we're investing 30 million over the next 3 to 5 years in our master plan. But we certainly have the capacity to take and alleviate the pressures that are on the likes of Dublin Port today as we speak.
Now, we'll come to your master plan, which is very ambitious, in a minute, but the type of traffic you come through here, we see trucks going onto this ship, but that trucks are just one aspect of the way freight is transported at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we're a roll-on, roll-off port, so obviously what you have here is trailers. We don't handle containers, as in the lift-on, lift-off. We do bulk here as well. We do logs. There's about 40, 50,000 tonne of logs that come in from Scotland every year through here. We also handle trade cars. We handle abnormal loads as well here, unusual loads. But predominantly on your freight here, it's your trailer traffic. We handle about 16% of the country's roll-on, roll-off traffic. And that's going to the UK and going to Europe. Also, from a passenger point of view, about 800,000-900,000 passengers a year come through Rosslare Europort. So obviously we have connections with Fishguard and Pembroke in the UK. Cherbourg is obviously very popular from a holiday destination. And recently, from February this year, we have Bilbao. We also have Roscoff at the moment during the summer season, albeit numbers are very low with the current situation of COVID. Yeah. But we hope to see that return next year once the COVID situation abates.
What's the Bilbao ferry like? Who are you taking there, and how long does it take to get there?
It's a new service operating out of Rosslare. It was operating out of Cork Port. And Brittany Ferries, having consulted with the market, both from a freight and from a passenger point of view, the demand was to be out of Rosslare. So it's primarily a freight service, but you will get, again, in any given year, you could get maybe 15 to 18,000 people that would use the service from a passenger holidaying point of view.
Are they foot passengers or cars?
No, very few foot passengers. It would mainly be cars. It's about a 30-hour sailing. But from a freight point of view, we do a lot of trade with the Spanish market, so it's a great service to have from a freight perspective. And we certainly, even despite COVID, we've seen some very positive trends in the use of that service since it just commenced here in February.
Now, we have here the trucks driving on, but you can also have your trailer shunted on and shunted off. That's a service which is growing.
Yeah, absolutely. We provide a full turnkey solution down here. So we actually provide not just the facilities and the marine, I suppose, port as a port authority, but we actually provide all the services here. So in the roll-on, roll-off, obviously we have tugs here that bring the trailers on and off for the customer. We provide passenger check-in, security. There's been a shift over the last number of years. So, I mean, drop trailers, this is where a truck driver would deliver the trailer to the port, and then which we would bring the trailer onto the ship. That's definitely a growing market. One of the reasons why it's grown. I suppose is the age profile of drivers. There's been a dramatic reduction in the availability of drivers in Ireland. The average age of a driver, according to the Irish Road Haul Association, is about 58 years of age.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And therefore, the industry has had to look at more, I suppose, innovative ways of how we can continue moving the trailer. So probably 15 years ago, drop trailers represented maybe 15% of the actual activity in a port. Unaccompanied now, as we call it, now probably represents closer to 55%. And we see that getting bigger, particularly with direct sailings to Europe. Wherever about driving to the UK and back, you can do that in a day. But if you're a lorry driver, you're going to be spending a number of days in Europe.
As you arrive into Rosslare Harbour, the first thing you see is the newly built huge customs post there to deal with cross-channel traffic after Brexit. Next is a viewing point with a panoramic view of all the shipping and port works. There I met Councillor George Lauder. He's a former Mayor of Wexford and a long-time champion for the development of the port, the closest point in Ireland to mainland Europe.
Absolutely the closest point to Europe, and I suppose in the context of Brexit, the issue of Rosslare and investment in Rosslare has always been a bugbear for the people of not just Wexford but the entire region of the southeast, because we're in a situation where Dublin Port is bursting at the seams, and an hour and a half down the road we have a port that up to very recently was operating at just 38% capacity. Now, tremendous work is being done in the port at the minute, and a lot more ambition has been instilled by the presence of Glenn Carr and his team here. So the future does look good, but we really need to look to the future in terms of not just Rosslare as a facility for a local area, but Rosslare as a strategic national facility. I mean, in 2018, 2.7 million passengers came in and out of Ireland. 1.7 million of those came to the Port of Dublin, yet 267,000 only came through Rosslare. There is massive scope to not only reduce the stress and the pressure on Dublin Port, where ships are actually sometimes reversing in to let other ones out, but also to enhance an underutilised facility, a really strategic facility that is the Port of Rosslare. Because this is the closest port to mainland Europe, and we are going to run into difficulties with the land bridge of Great Britain in the very near future. So the notion that we have this underutilised facility an hour and a half away from a port that is bursting at the seams is ludicrous.
And it's also a 6 or 7 hour sail, don't forget.
Absolutely. You have to steam down the coast. You have to steam past Rosslare as you head to France. It doesn't make sense in any fashion. So, it's a no-brainer in the context of strategic development and investment, even from the climate change point of view. You know, it's something that we need to be bringing traffic from the south part of Ireland, southern part of Ireland, to Rosslare, not sending it into Dublin. Don't forget the plan for freight in Dublin is, when they arrive in the port, if there's a delay or a hold-up, the plan is send them back out to park up on the motorways. Absolutely ludicrous. We have this fabulous facility that needs investment, and I'm glad to see the €30 million investment has been proposed. Let's hope that money is there with Irish Rail, because we've heard promises in the past. We need that €30 million investment in the port to deepen the port, to lengthen the berths, to allow proper sailings to operate on a much more enhanced and regular basis here.
The port has a strange kind of body corporate because it's run by Irish Rail. Yep. Does that create any problems?
In my view, it does. I would have to say it certainly has improved under Glenn Carr. This is very much a profit-making port. The difficulty year in, year out, was the profits that were made in Rosslare were reinvested in the black hole that was Irish Rail. You know, and that has to change, in my view. I don't think Irish Rail have the interest in running this port as it should be run, as a strategic commercial part of the economy of the whole island of Ireland. I think they're just interested in making sure they make a few bob to reinvest in Irish Rail, and that's not something we want to see.
Let's talk about it as a gateway to Europe. when Brexit comes. There are already some facilities being built just up the way here.
Yes, just up the road we have our customs facilities. I think one of the key things of this €30 million investment, and I think this will set Rosslare apart, is that we have to develop Rosslare as a smart port, a port where technology is used to ensure that the smooth transit of freight is possible within the port. We see that in the port of Rotterdam, one of the biggest ports in the world, where they have developed smart technology, and indeed many ports throughout the world are developing this, so when freight arrives in, that it doesn't have to go through the rigmarole that we will have to see
sitting around in the yard.
That's not what people are interested in, and certainly hauliers won't be interested in, and haulage companies. Freight is get to A to B as quickly as possible. So to develop Rosslare using the available technology as a smart port, I think will be a clincher for this port, and let it be a unique port in Ireland in doing that.
How are you going to persuade hauliers to come this route to mainland Europe rather than going the land bridge?
Because the difficulties I've mentioned, it was spoken about just this week in Leinster House in Dáil Éireann in relation to the difficulties that are going to occur as a result of the bureaucracy of Brexit. We persuade them by time, by making sure that their exit out of this country to mainland Europe is smooth and swift. That is not going to happen on the land bridge. There's going to be too many complications. We have to piggyback on that and benefit from it, and we have to utilise all our resources to do that.
What kind of time? The sailing time is about, 16 or 18 hours to Cherbourg?
Yeah, 16 to 18 hours. But we're looking at different ports as well. The port of Roscoff is being looked at, and other ports I know are being looked at as well. This is once truckers get on and hauliers get on the ship, they're moving, they're working. They're not being held up by bureaucracy at ports, which is going to happen. You can have no doubt. Brexit is not going to work for haulage companies, for hauliers, for drivers, for freight, for containers. It just isn't going to work. And the volume of tonnage that's going through Dublin, which will probably use a lot of the land bridge, will not benefit from that either. 60%, I think it's 60% of all passengers went through Dublin in 2018. 50% of all freight tonnage went through Dublin. We have scope here in the sunny southeast.
And as you say that in the rain.
It's a soft old day. We have scope here in Rosslare to develop, enhance and improve the passage of freight from this country and to this country from mainland Europe.
Back down among the ships and the trucks, manager Glenn Carr told me about their master plan and how they hope to be at the centre of a new, huge offshore wind energy industry.
In the last couple of weeks, early July, we lodged our planning application with Wexford County Council for our master plan. Our initial master plan sees an investment of €30 million over four phases of work over the next 3 to 5 years. We're going to totally reconfigure the port. We have a new access road coming into the port, linking onto the new motorway. We're greatly improving the footprint of the port as well. And fully utilising the full 46 acres of land that's available. We also want to, and we're actually where we're standing here at the moment, which is berth number 3 and berth number 4, we want to extend berth number 3 practically into berth number 4 and create one...
This is like one arm of the harbour.
Yeah. I mean, vessels of the future, we've done an in-depth analysis around where vessels are going. They're getting longer and wider. So what we want to do is create a berth in excess of 230 metres that will be able to accommodate all vessels of the future in regards to roll-on, roll-off and passenger. So big plans for the port, €30 million investment. We're also going to see substantial investment in the border inspection post. So Rosslare is only one of two ports
that's
now.
That's part of Brexit.
Part of Brexit. So we'll be fully Brexit ready. We are Brexit ready as we speak today. We have a temporary facility just outside of the port here.
There are big plans for this part of the country for offshore wind energy. You see Rosslare playing a major part of that.
Yeah, we do. We strongly believe, and the evidence, by the way, from a lot of the industry in offshore wind is that Rosslare is the best geographically positioned port to service the offshore wind energy market. But unlike other ports, we also have a couple of other advantages. We have land available and we have capacity available at this port for this development. This is really a significant development, not just for the port, but more so for the region. The potential of a couple of thousand jobs and the whole regeneration of Kilran, Rosslare and the southeast region. There's about 300,000 square metres of land recently acquired by a company called Excellus, who want to develop the Rosslea Europort Offshore Wind Business Park, and they're looking to put in facilities there both for construction but also for startup companies, educational training facilities, all dedicated to the offshore. So what's critically important now is that there's a port developed to service the physical servicing but also the construction phases during the next 20 to 30 years for the offshore wind market. And we believe Rosslea is the prime and really the only port in the southeast and in the Republic of Ireland that can be developed to ensure that that business is developed here in Ireland. We have plans to be brought forward now to the various departments and stakeholders over the next 2 to 3 weeks, which will see four different options ranging from a 450 to 200 million investment. And I know 200 million at this point in time might sound a lot of money, but given the scale of this industry, given the whole climate action plan and the targets that Ireland has to achieve, a 200 million investment in Rosslea, I believe, will give a great return for the Exchequer, but it will also give a great return for the South East region and create thousands of jobs and will help Ireland with their climate action plans going forward.
Offshore wind, it's the way forward, renewable, but the parts, the physical parts, are enormous. You can deal with them here.
We can't deal with them right at the moment, or we can certainly, even with our master plan that we've just recently submitted, we could probably deal with 20% of the market. What we want to do is deal with 90% of the market. Yet you're talking about blades of 120 metres in length at this point in time. You're talking about having a facility that's quayside or has land beside it for pre-construction that can handle objects and blades of that type of magnitude. And I just think it'd be a shame that we don't develop the port to service what's going to be, I suppose, business there, that's going to make commercial sense for that investment, and more importantly, that gives something to the region. At the moment, Dublin Port is a great success, but I just don't see how much longer we can keep shoveling trucks into Dublin City. The offshore wind energy, what that does is gives the confidence and, I suppose, gives an anchor tenant over the next 20, 30 years to justify maybe a 200 million spend. But I also think the spin-off activities from the offshore wind will be transformational for the whole of the southeast region.
And thanks to Glenn Carr, George Lawler and everyone at Rosslea Europort. They have huge modernisation plans for the port, and the way things are handled at the dockside has already changed vastly in recent years. Retired sea captain Brendan Ford has been recounting some of his ocean-going adventures for us over the last few months. Brendan ran away to sea aged 16 in 1948 and has been all over the world several times. But he also spent a good few years ashore and recounts now life on Dublin's docks when he was a superintendent there for a German-Irish shipping company.
Rising in the ranks and becoming dock superintendent in Dublin Port. In the late 40s, I spent a year on Swedish ships, Fyrbris and Rönnskär, gradually perfecting my Swedish. But in December 1949, I had to leave Rönnskär because I broke bones in my hand at Casablanca. We carried a cargo of boxed oranges to Rouen in France, and I eventually disembarked at New Haven, England, and headed for home. In 1952, I extended my experience by sailing in the SS Historien of Liverpool to the South Atlantic and to the Indian Ocean, calling at the ports of Luanda and Lobito in Angola in Africa, to Walvis Bay in Southwest Africa, Namibia today, to Cape Town, Port Elizabeth and Durban in South Africa, and to Lorenzo Marques and Beira in Mozambique. On the SS Inventor of Liverpool, I sailed to the West Indies and the Gulf of Mexico, calling to Bridgetown, Barbados, New Orleans, Galveston in Texas, Corpus Christi and Brownsville, Texas, close to the border with Mexico. We carried all types of American manufactured goods and Caribbean produce. I returned to service in the Baltic in September 1953 as a naval-bodied seaman on the SS Jura of Glasgow, on which ship I became bosun in December 1954. We brought timber homewards to the UK and Ireland and coal outwards to the Baltic. I completed my studies at the Irish Nautical College, Dunleary, and gained my home trade mate certificate in December 1955. In a very rewarding 8-year period with Irish Shipping Limited, finishing in 1964, I sailed to locations as diverse as Finland, the UK Algeria, Portugal, Panama Canal, and Japan. We also made several voyages to Canada, and from where we brought back sawn timber to Britain and Ireland. I joined Palgrave Murphy of Dublin in May 1962 and began regular runs to Germany, where my knowledge of German proved very useful. I met my future wife, Elke, in Hamburg at this time, and we were married in Hout. My shipping routine involved a fortnightly run to Germany and back to Dublin via Cork. I was 2 years in this trade, during which I got my Master's Foreign Going Certificate in 1963, served as second mate and then as chief officer. And then, one morning, the gods looked down favourably. I was called to head office. In trepidation at what blunder I might have made, I was met by a three-man German delegation from the Bugsiger line, Herrn Benike, Jungblut and Spreckels, co-partners of Palgrave Murphy, who spoke in German to me, stating that they wanted a German-speaking dock superintendent to run their operation in Dublin Port, involving a heavy share of German and Scandinavian ships, and a person who was also capable of working closely with the dockers. Would I take the job? Having spent 16 years at sea, now married and starting a family in Dublin, it was an offer I could not refuse. I began in April 1964. Dublin Port was still a large, bustling seaport at that time, crowded with different types of ships from four corners of the world. Alexandra Basin, the coal jetties, north and south walls were all thronged daily with a mass of people. Casual dockers and permanent button men, stevedores, boatmen, carpenters, welders, coal men, drivers, ship's crew and lookers-on. The air was filled with the clamour of the docks, the rattle of steam winches, clanging pipes and barrels, shunting rail wagons, ship and tugboat whistles, shouting and yelling accompanied by the odd loud thud from the cargo holds, the bellowing of cattle from the north wall and the screeching of scavenging seagulls. To a bystander, it seemed like bedlam, but to those familiar with the workings of the port, it was music for the soul. My job was stevedoring, to manage the unloading and loading of ships as efficiently and as harmoniously as possible. Working from the manifest and cargo storage plan supplied by the ship's agent, I would note especially any heavy items, the number of workable areas and the types of cargo handling gear on the ships, whether derricks or cranes. I then estimated the number of hours required to discharge the vessel, the maximum number of gangs of men required, and the number of forklifts needed, whether to use the ship's gear or choose the hiring of Dublin Port and Docks cranes as being more advantageous. We dealt with all kinds of vessels, Swedish and Finnish ships carrying pulp, newsprint reels, timber and telegraph poles, West African traders, mostly under UK, Dutch, Nigerian and Ghanaian flags, laden with sawn timber, redwood logs, bagged cocoa beans and palm oil in the ship's tanks, vessels from Germany carrying tractors, vehicle parts, tanks of lager, refrigerators and other manufactured goods. Russian and Polish vessels were also regular callers, which I occasionally dealt with. The Soviets brought newsprint from Canada, the Poles brought sheet glass and tractors from the Baltic and wool from Australia. Of course there were problems, but they could be overcome. Wet weather, power failures, equipment breakdown and or handling mishaps. Strikes or stoppages were an ever-present hazard, with the dockers looking for hardship money, dirty money, danger money or extra men. However, in industrial matters, I always kept a few principles to the fore, which generally ensured the smooth discharge of ships. Listen carefully, be patient, keep a good sense of humour and never dig in too soon. The daily routine in the docks hinged on what was known as the read each morning, the selection of dockers to work on that day. The read took place in the open at about 8 o'clock in the old at the old harbour master's office at the top of North Wall Quay. A couple of hundred men would assemble for the read, and about 8 stevedoring companies picked their own gangs, myself having set out the number of gangs to be hired. Later the read took place in the new canteen building at Alexandra Basin, who actually got work felt at the choice of a stevedore's head foreman. But it was a time-honoured system that was to change drastically. Containerisation was coming, and Palgrave Murphy purchased 4 refrigerated containers to be used in their operation in Dublin. This was the moment when containerisation began in Dublin. Containerisation had arrived and was to transform forever not only dockside work practices, but the very Dockland landscape itself.
Brendan Ford. And that's it for Seascapes for this week. We're back at the same time next Friday. Everything on the programme is podcast and it's on our website, rte.ie/seascapes. If you want to contact me or the programme, the email is seascapes@rte.ie. If you're anywhere near the water over the next week, stay safe.
And Seascapes is presented and produced by Fergal Keane.